you like this episode, please subscribe, share with others, rate and review so we can continue to bring you great programming.
Let's change the world together. Welcome to the Snapcast, the podcast for all nonprofit professionals, bringing you interviews and amazing ideas for nonprofit leaders.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Nonprofit Snapcast. I'm your host, Mickey Desai, here very happy to be speaking with Elizabeth Montgomery and Melody Miller. Elizabeth and Melody are both founders of the Ruth Weiss Foundation, a poetry grant-making nonprofit. And you guys give awards annually to poets worldwide who create highly original poems. Did I get that right?
Yes.
Yeah.
So my first silly question is, what is a highly original poem?
Oh, good question. No, I love that. Highly original is we're looking for not only the content, but the style of the poetry. So for instance, last year, the winner of the award had a very unique way of writing where she had different columns on the page and you could read it across or down the middle.
Oh.
And it's just amazing. It's on the foundation website, also performing that. And what's great about it is that was so original. And it was not only a great poem, but she also stood out in terms of the way she presented. Right. One of our committee members, a poet laureate from San Francisco, said, "I could teach this."
Wow.
Yeah.
No kidding. That's amazing. Okay. So you launched the foundation after making a documentary film called Ruth Weiss, The Beat Goddess, and you released that back in 2019. There's many ways to take this conversation, but can we talk about the documentary real quick and what led you, what is the real impetus for forming a foundation? Most people, you know, most filmmakers I know don't stick around to drive the foundation that they may inspire. How did you land on this topic and why does it mean so much to you?
Of course. So Elizabeth has been connected to the Beat Generation for many years, and we collaborate together on documentaries in China about educating children there. And she had recommended me to go check out Ruth Weiss's show as they were friends, and she was in China at the time. So I went there and I was just blown away when she walked on the stage. She had teal hair, crystals on her head, and this husky voice. And she had a bass player and saxophone and a man on a log, and started reading her poetry. And it was parts of her life story, from escaping the Holocaust to her surviving as an artist in the United States. And a lot of her poetry was about her life, but also you could relate to it in ways of your own life. And I had chills. I just had to know who this woman was. So went up to her, and we immediately became friends. And Elizabeth and I took road trips to go visit her up in Albion, Mendocino, to film her story. And of course, one interview didn't cut it. It took many interviews because 92 years was a long time. And so we became very close. After we would film, we'd watch movies together, eat ice cream, eat pizza, and just hang out. I never thought that me in my 20s would be hanging out with a 90-year-old, you know, and just having a good time. And so we all became just very close, like a family. And so when she passed away, it was very painful and sad, but we also had this urge and drive that we're going to make sure her story is heard by everyone around the world. And we also want to help people who are poets and, you know, are struggling, because she struggled her whole life, still applying for grants herself and poetry contests just to, you know, get food and pay the rent. And so we wanted to honor her in, you know, doing that for poets.
Yeah. That's very cool. I was going to say that, you know, some of the best conversations you've ever had, some of the best parties I've ever been to had nonagenarians driving the agenda. So like, they know how to rock. That's pretty cool. So So you just got sucked in, it sounds like.
Yeah, it evolved. But by the time Melody had, how many hours, Mel? Maybe.
We spent years filming her. But it altogether it took 3 years to make the film. So we started in 2016. We finished in 2019, where the film premiered at the Asolo Art Film Festival in Italy. And then that year was actually kind of crazy because Ruth Wise had a stroke and she was in the hospital just a few months before, and we weren't sure if she was going to make it. I remember sitting there at her bed, like showing her the movie. And then, you know, something came within her that she's going to live. She's a fighter. And so she bounced right back, and just like 2 or 3 months later, we were having a birthday party in San Francisco, big film premiere with all her friends and fans. And I'm so joyful that she was able to experience all the screenings of the movie and people buying her books and just championing her in all the way up till like 2020 March, Women's Day, right before the pandemic. You know, she had her last performance at the Cinequest Film Festival, and they awarded her the Maverick Spirit Award, which is one of their most prestigious awards. And she did a performance on stage and a Q&A and a film. And throughout the whole film, I sat next to her and we held hands. It was just, that was like the epic moment of it all, is to, like, we did it, you know.
That is fantastic. Very fulfilling, I'm sure. So how do you go from being filmmakers to foundation runners? I'm going to use the term. How do you do that?
Yeah, that it was interesting. I think I mentioned before that it's a strange sequel. It's you know, documentaries, you're right, a lot of people just move on to the next documentary, and we'd like to do that too, for sure. But the key thing is that in doing the foundation, I said to Melody, you know, I worked in nonprofits for years. So I worked at Jane Addams Hull House. I worked at Central City Hospitality House in San Francisco, Tenderloin. I've had a lot of experience with grant, you know, the foundation community. And I was a little hesitant to start a foundation, but her passion, and then Ruth passing, was, had already been talking with her about what she wanted to do with, you know, wouldn't it be great if I could award grants, you know, and we had talked to her about that. So then Melody had the drive to push it forward. And I think the key thing is that I wanted to make sure that we got it done quickly, because we were talking to a lot of other filmmakers and nonprofits and people, and they were going, it takes about a year. And we did legal Zoom instead, and paid the, what was it, Mel, $1,000?
I think it was $750.
Yeah.
And we did legal Zoom, and they were so nice on the phone, and within like a week we had a nonprofit.
Yeah.
So wait, within a week you had a nonprofit with your 501c3.
That took a couple months, but at least we started the nonprofit and started all the paperwork. But then within like 2 months we have the 501c3. And I remember getting it in the mail. I'm like, oh my God.
Yay. Yeah, right. It's like the Holy Grail. Oh.
Yes, it was. we couldn't do that much without that. And so we got it before the following year, which was great. So she passed away in July 31st, 2020. And by the end of the year, we had the nonprofit set up and began a committee in January, right? And we had a grant committee. We didn't want a lot of board members on, so that we just kept it simple, made our own decisions, but we focused on having a really good grant committee who helped us structure the entire process and criteria for selecting the grants. And they're really outstanding people.
That's excellent. So you're content with keeping the board small, or is there a desire to expand it? What are your immediate plans in that regard on the board level?
Mel?
I think, you know, as we get to know more of the committee members, being on the board is a lot to ask for someone. You have to do so much work and commitment for free. So we would want to find someone who is as passionate about Ruth Wise as we are, and also who could commit that much time and effort for the board. So we are definitely open to expanding. It's just finding those right people
sure.
who are on the mindset and collaborating, and that we could trust, yes. you know, with
That's
this.
Huge.
Yep. Big, yeah, huge thing. So I think the committee really kind of acts as like who's coming back every year, who's really interested in being a part of the foundation. I think, you know, one of them might join.
You yeah. mentioned one thing. I mean, one huge thing I think is critically important is the element of trust in picking your board members, but and of course a passion for the cause, right? I think that's mm-hmm. also very critical. But how else do you determine who else you're looking for? How are you targeting? Who are you targeting as board members?
Yeah, I think skill sets, right? Skill sets would be really helpful, because, you know, right now Elizabeth and I, we're doing everything. We're doing all the taxes, we're doing all the paperwork, we're doing all the hiring mm-hmm. of social media people or interns, high school interns to help out with us. We're coordinating all the website design and application process, and coordinating meetings with the committee, and, you know, funding it. And it's just a lot of work that's on the both of us to do. And we would want to like bring people with specific skills who could take on specific tasks.
Particularly fundraising would be big. Yeah. That's a big one for mm-hmm. the next year. And also, like as Melody was saying, you know, somebody who could drive the overall marketing and PR, because we've been doing a lot of that ourselves, and it's in good shape because Melody's amazing at all that she just mentioned. And we have a wonderful group called Pilot City that are young people who are doing externships at companies, and I think you know, it takes time, but I think they're ideas and their originality of the goal of having the beat generation be extended into the current generations is really important, and how they translate what they like about the poetry and the people, and learning about how the beats functioned in the world and had such an impact on our culture or counterculture, then that's going to help the overall cause that Ruth was behind for us, mm-hmm. because she did really connect with young people.
That is very cool. I'm going to move on to the third point you supplied in your notes here, talking about expanding your outreach using social media, hiring a PR firm. We all know that social media is unavoidable these days, but why hire a PR firm so early in the game? Why did you make that decision?
So, I mean, PR firms are experts at targeting organizations or outlets that are our audience. And so there's a lot of people on social media, but a lot of the times it's like, people just mm-hmm. scroll by and don't really care. But if there's like a program like your podcast that a lot of people who might be interested in applying to our annual grant or watching the movie hits them in home in the right place, and they're compassionate about it, that's where we're able to get our audience or our grant applicants. So I think that's why it's really helpful to have a PR firm. I mean, social media can only get you so far, but
true.
If you're listening to your favorite podcast or reading your favorite, you know, magazine, that's something you're probably going to take the next step to look into it deeper.
You use a term here, which I really like. It's upgraded storytelling, yep. You know, taking opportunities to do some upgraded storytelling.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit more about that. Why was that important versus just what a lot of nonprofits, I think, do, which is to simply throw money at Facebook, throw money at Google or whatever. Why was upgraded storytelling so important?
Yeah, I think it it goes along with the skill set of the PR people, because they took the time to interview us and our backgrounds and how we are impacting this story, and in getting from us those tidbits. It's not that they highlighted us so much, but they were able to follow leads in stories we were telling and then recreate those into very interesting, using different words and kind of simplifying sometimes mm-hmm. what we said, highlighting what we said. Mm-hmm. And then that targeted message is, it's going to people who we really want it. If we said we want these outlets to, you know, we want the Holocaust Museum, or we want somebody to specific, they could do that. And that was great, because it's sometimes really hard.
Yeah. And we also have a team that is outreaching out to poetry organizations, museums, universities to apply to the grant. That's one of the hardest parts. I didn't realize with the foundation is actually getting people to apply.
Yeah.
And like how much time, money, and effort we have to spend for people to apply to this grant,
right.
Where they could win $3,000. We thought we'd be having all the applications come in. And that's, I think, one of the hardest parts is just getting known as an established foundation, and that, you know, we're legitimate, mm-hmm. we're giving you the money, you know,
right.
We have an awesome committee. It's just getting that started and getting those applications in. We're doing massive outreach, but it's really hard to, we're also looking at timing. Maybe it's the summertime. Maybe everybody is just on vacation, but they have plenty of time to write their poems, you know?
Yeah. Right. So I think the key is we're trying to make, we're pulling it all together this year. And so by next year, we will have all the pieces that a good board member could put that, strap this together and say, here's the plan and here's everything we need and have the timing right. And so it's just been a real learning process.
Yeah, no doubt. If you had maybe one or two specific tips to share with people who are maybe wrestling with the same issues, if they have a cause and they'd like to form a foundation around it, what would you tell them? Hmm. That may not be a fair question.
No, it's fair. No, it's fair. Yeah, Melody.
I mean, listening to this podcast is the first step, and listening to other people's stories about their experiencing starting a foundation. Because I think one thing we didn't do, we were very passionate and loved Ruth, and we're like, okay, we're gonna determine. It was kind of a part of like maybe our healing journey of her mm-hmm. passing that, you know, we committed to mm-hmm. this foundation. So I kind of wish I would have interviewed more foundation heads to speak about the process, even though the process was really easy. You know, just speaking to other people who have similar causes to you and asking how they did it, sit down and have coffee with them, I think is the way to go. Then you could, they'll tell you all the things that went wrong, they did wrong for you not to do. And then you can design your path like that.
and we did get some help from the Beat Museum, because I noticed they only had 5 people on their board. One was a lawyer and one was marketing, and, you know,
sure.
And it was sort of really helpful that we had that. And I also think a tip would be to get your paperwork done and get that set up so that somebody else can guide you in that a little bit, because that's a real time stealer. And if you can put your energy into running the organization and not having to do so much with the paperwork, it will help a lot. Okay. What do you think, Mal? Do you agree with that?
Yes. Yes. I mean, I've cried doing the taxes. it's like, oh my God.
It's so complicated. I'm like, what are they talking about?
I'm doing this to save money. You know, it was just like, just doing the taxes yourself for a nonprofit is tough.
Yeah.
On the one hand, it's supposed to be, you know, fairly straightforward. On the other hand, you have to make sure you have all your I's dotted and your T's crossed. And yeah, that's right. We are running out of time rapidly. Okay. So let's zoom back out here and say, if I wanted to see the film, where would I be able to find it?
Oh, this is exciting.
Yes. Yeah. So if you just search Ruth Wise, the Beat Goddess, I go to our website. All the sites are on it, on Amazon Prime and on many other different channels. And in the end of August, we'll be premiering on PBS. Okay. And so if you are a PBS station listening to this and want to air our film, just go to NETA, the National Education Telecommunication Association, and pick up our film. And contact us, tell us, let's promote it. And so just even searching Ruth Wise film, our movie will come up and you can watch it right away.
Okay. So one more time, what's your website?
Ruth Wise film.
Oh, that's it.
W-E-I-S-S film.
Yeah.
Ruth Wise, W-E-I-S-S. Got it.
Yeah.
Excellent. And how do we find you? If folks wanted to contact you directly, should they find you on LinkedIn? What would you prefer?
LinkedIn. Yeah, for sure. Oh, and let's give the foundation website. If you'd like to apply to our annual grant, go to ruthwisefoundation.org. So Wise is spelled W-E-I-S-S. And so Ruth Wise Foundation. And please apply to our grant. We're offering a $3,000 grant to a Maverick Spirit Award. So if you're already an established poet and have a couple published works, that would be your category. And then there's an Emerging Poet Award, which is $2,000. And that is for poets who aren't necessarily yet established yet, but are on the track of following their career passions. And then we have a Youth Poet Award for youth under the age of 18. So you can apply. And this year's theme is nature. So you can write a poem that is a few sentences or two pages long about nature. Ruth Wise.
Never published before.
Yes. That's the key. If you've published it, then it will be disqualified, but because we hope that we could do the publishing. Mm-hmm. And in addition to the money that you'll receive, you'll also be able to go to Writers Con, which is an annual event that brings mentors and speakers and publishers all together. And so you'll get to meet publishers and show your work or meet mentors there. And so I think that's really great. In addition, the finalists also get to go to Writers Con. So even if you don't win the money, you'll be able to get that mentorship.
That's fantastic. Elizabeth Melody, this has been really good stuff. I can't wait to get this episode published. Thank you for being my guests today.
Thank you. We really enjoy everything that you're doing with nonprofits and cars and everything else.
The car thing. Yeah, I don't know if the audience knows my involvement with the Thing About Cars podcast, but I can't wait to see the triumph and hopefully our paths will cross again in the future.
I hope so too.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you for taking the time to help highlight our story and we really appreciate it.
Happy to do it. Thanks again.
This has been The Snapcast. Thank you for joining us.
The Snapcast is a production of the Nonprofit Snapshot. Please visit us at nonprofitsnapshot.org to learn more about our consulting work and the ways we can help your organization continue to make the world a better place.